The incredible shrinking audience hasn't shrunk too much. I want to give what is as close as we can get to constructing interesting topological field theory using purely topological methods. And in doing so, this relates to a famous topological field theory known as Chern-Simons theory. And in doing so, and in really coming to grips with the topological constructions, some new twists emerge, and I think tell you something about Chern-Simons theory and the space of West Zimino-Witten conformal blocks. So let me say, is this working, by the way? Yeah, okay. Let me say a little bit about Chern-Simons theory, just in very general terms. So the input is, let's see, we're going to start with G, which will be a compact, and in the classical case, it's simple and simply connected. Lie group. So that's, and then the input data is a four cocycle on BG with integer coefficients. So I have a lot I want to say today, and I'm not going to go through very much about the Chern-Simons theory. But it starts with this, and this is used to it's used to write down a Lagrangian. On the space of G bundles with connection on a three manifold, and then a path, you do a path integral, and out of this you get a three-dimensional topological field theory. So you start with this, and you get a three-dimensional topological field theory. Okay. So let's just collect a little bit of what data this is. So this means to every three manifold, you get a number. Well, I'm using this. That Z stands for cocycles. This Z is my standard notation for a partition function. So I get a number, a complex number. To every two manifold, I get a vector space. And to every cobordism of two manifolds, so if I have a two manifold here and I have some cobordism to some different two manifold, which I didn't really draw very differently, if I have this kind of cobordism, this gives me a map from this a linear transformation to this vector space. So a cobordism gives me a linear transformation, and you could think of diffeomorphisms as special kinds of cobordisms. So diffeomorphisms act, and these things are supposed to compose. There's actually more data. It actually continues down in dimension. So actually, to every one manifold, you get a category. It's a special kind of category, and I won't be explicit, but you can think of it as, you might think of it as a DG category or just a linear category, the category enriched over vector spaces. So the Hom objects are supposed to be some kind of chain complexes of complex vector spaces, or you can just think of them as a vector space. So the empty one manifold is supposed to go to the category of vector spaces over the complex numbers, or maybe differential graded vector spaces, something like that. Now, again, I just want to ruminate on this, the arrangement of this data. There's even a sort of speculation in some versions where you go down to points, to zero manifolds, but I'm going to stop at this level. So
let's just see kind of how this hierarchy of stuff gets put together. So to every one manifold, I had a vector. I get this category. Suppose I have a two manifold. Well, I can think of that as a cobordism from the empty one manifold to the empty one manifold. And so that gives me a functor from vect to vect. I didn't say it, but this functor will be forced to be additive. And so it's determined by where the one-dimensional vector space goes. And this goes to some vector space, which is the value on this. It's the value on that surface. Suppose I have a closed three manifold. Then I can think of that as sitting over the in. Let's see. So notice, I think the thing to notice here is that you think of this one manifold as sitting over a point. I could have generalized this by having this be a manifold with boundary. And this map has relative dimension 1. And so if I want to fit my, if I want to relate this data to my, this category to my 3 manifold, I have to have my 3 manifold sitting over something of dimension 2. So I might have my 3 manifold just lying over, if it's closed, it might lie over the interior of this simplex. And this will give me, this configuration of data is supposed to give me a diagram that's supposed to give me a diagram of functors and a natural transformation from this functor to the composite. But these are all empty manifolds and empty cobordisms, so these are all identity functors. And so I get a natural automorphism of the identity functor to this three manifold, and I could take its value on the one-dimensional vector space, and that will be some number, and that's how you get a number out of this. If you started just with this category, that's how all this hierarchy of data is related. Okay, so I want to just, this. I'm just saying this kind of introduction a little bit to set the stage. I know I'm being deliberately kind of vague about this, but I wanted to connect to the point of view I was advocating in my first talk. So you can think of all of this as kind of as some kind of a map between directed spaces. So this is kind of a map from the directed space of one manifold. So the points are one manifolds. A path in this directed space will be a cobordism between one manifolds. And a two simplex will be a path between paths, or a two simplex will be some map of a three manifold with corners down to the two simplex that's transverse at the corners. So this is all of that data can be summarized by thinking of it as a directed space where the points are what you think of it as one manifold moving through cobordisms and sweeping out manifolds that attain dimension 3 but no higher. And this is some kind of functor from that to what you might call the directed space of DG categories. All right. So this picture is definitely not original to me. There have been lots of versions of it floating around, and I know Bertrand wrote a paper. You can find this kind of thing formulated. Okay. So these, and again, I'm using this word directed space, but it's really just a code word for a higher category. All right, and I advocated in my first talk that we topologists should really start learning to do homotopy theory with these. After all, this topological field theory is some kind of map from some topological object to some other one. This is something we're familiar with and know how to. This side of the story we've seen, this side's somewhat mysterious, but I think if we we came to grips with these objects and really learned to calculate homotopy classes of maps between them, there might be a way of starting with something like that lambda using purely topological methods and producing something like this. I don't know how to do that. But I know how to do a first approximation, and that's what I want to talk about today. So let's see. I have one of these directed spaces. I don't understand directed spaces, but I do understand ordinary spaces. So I would like to take this directed space of manifolds, and I'd like to turn it into an ordinary space. So how can I do that? Well, let's see. I think I'll start from the bottom and go up. So this directed space that I'm looking at has points. It has some paths. It has some two simplices, which are directed. It goes that way. And a little bit of higher structure involving diffeomorphisms and things like that. Now, one way of making a directed space into an ordinary space is to, well, there's two things I can do. I can either formally put in an inverse to every path. So if I have a path from A to B, I could just formally put a path in from B to A. If I think of these as categories, I'm just inverting some morphisms or localizing. Or if I think of this as a monoid, I'm group completing. So I could certainly start at some level, and I could take everything above that level and I could start at some level and take everything below it and just formally invert maps. Okay. The other thing I could do is I could just restrict my attention to the things that span my space that are invertible. So I could just restrict my attention to paths which have an inverse, or simplices which have a simplex that's directed and going the other way. So I have two maneuvers I can make to turn this into something that's not directed, or that's, you know, bidirected or something. I don't know what to call it. All right. And so I want to do that here. I want to turn this into a space and then analyze what space that is and give that construction of the theory. So let's see. I want to do it at the place where I hit vector spaces. So down here we got some kind of a category. Here I got something like a vector space. And here, up here, I got something like a number. At least when the manifold was closed, or in this case, at least when these are at the base point or the empty set. So what I want to do is I want to modify this thing by I want to restrict. Oh, you know what? Let's think of this. Let's say here I have a natural transformation or a map of vector spaces. That's what I get for a. So to a two-manifold, I got a vector space, and to a cobordism between them, I got a map of vector spaces. And if the two-manifold had a boundary, I get something that's slightly more elaborate involving this category. Okay, what I want to do is at this level, I want to restrict. So I want to restrict to isomorphisms above here. Okay, so now I'm not going to get all maps of vector spaces. I'm just going to get isomorphisms of vector spaces. And now this category, this functor is supposed to take disjoint unions to tensor products. And what I want to do is I want to invert that. So I want to group complete down here, from here down. And what I'll get out of a vector space then is a stable vector space. Well, let me now kind of say this in a way that will relate to something more conventional in topology. Let's imagine in Chern-Simons theory, I had to every two manifold a vector space, and as these moved through cobordisms and things, these vector spaces all mapped to each other. But if these two manifolds are moving through diffeomorphisms, those vector spaces are going to be all isomorphic to each other, and they will form a vector bundle over some kind of space. So Chern-Simons produces, for every family sigma S, S in some parameter space of two manifolds, a vector bundle over S. Well, what am I going to get? Well, so look, I'm by restricting to isomorphisms from here up, I'm only looking at families of two manifolds. I'm not allowing them to change through cobordisms. And by group completing below, so then I might get a vector bundle, but by group completing, I'm only getting a stable bundle. So what we can hope to get, we could hope to construct the K class. And to do this sort of functoriality and with all the compatibility that you might hope that you would expect from Chern-Simons theory. I'm not inverting. My picture might be a little misleading. I'm not inverting these morphisms. There's another structure here which is. Maybe I'm saying something wrong. Yeah, I think maybe I'm motivated a little. Maybe I didn't motivate this in the right in the best way. So for some completely unmotivated random reason, I'm going to stabilize all these vector bundles and try to make an element in K theory. Thank you, Ezra. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway, this is what we can hope to do. Okay. So, all right. So, roughly speaking, I'm taking the information that was there in Chern-Simons theory, and I'm looking at a little bit less. I'm not looking at a three-manifold invariant, but I'm still willing to understand diffeomorphisms and families of surfaces. And instead of getting a vector bundle over those parameter spaces of families, I'm going to get K-theory classes. And hopefully they'll all fit together in the way, I could try to set this up so they all fit together in the way Chern-Simons theory tells me they should. These vector bundles are sometimes called the space of WZW conformal blocks, and that's the term in my title. But I just want to focus on the topological construction here. Okay. So here's what you'd like to do. What did we have? What did Chern-Simons theory come from? I had some kind of geometric object, a three-manifold or maybe a two-manifold, and I looked at the space of principal G-bundles with connection over that, and then I did some integral, a path integral over that space. So one way or another, we need to build these vector spaces or vector bundles out of that space of G bundles with connection. Now, I want to be stingy about using input. And so I'm not going to use the Lagrangian yet. I'm going to see how far I can go without even talking about the Lagrangian, but I'm going to borrow one piece of information from it, which is the space of classical solutions, the space of solutions to the Euler-Lagrange equation, which is the space of flat connections. So I'm gonna take that away from the out of the original formulation and then try to account for all of this theory just based on that. So let me introduce some notation. Let me let M sigma be the space, or really that's a stack of flat G connections on sigma. And sigma might be a 0 or a 1. I mean, sigma might be a 1 manifold, it might be a 2 manifold, it might be a 2 manifold with boundary. Okay. All right. And so if I have, here's the idea that we're somehow going to take, we're going to get out of, for a closed Riemann surface, we're going to take the push forward of 1 in K theory. We're going to integrate 1 in K theory over this and get a K theory class on a point. And if I have this surface moving in a family, I'll do that in families and get a K class on the parameter space. And that's the only way I could think of, given a space like this, to get a vector bundle or a K class somewhere. So that's the construction we want to make, and we want to make that work. I also want to do it with manifolds with boundary, and we'll make our whole field theory as follows. If I have a Riemann surface with boundary, let's call this the incoming boundary and this the outgoing boundary, then I have this diagram of flat G bundles with connection over on sigma, flat G bundles with connection on the incoming boundary, on the outgoing boundary, and I could apply K theory to this diagram. Sorry, M sigma. And I can get a map from the K theory of this to the K theory of this by pulling back and doing a push forward map along this map. So what we really want to do is now, the next thing we want to do then is investigate what data do we need to define a push forward in K theory from the moduli space of flat G bundles with connection on a surface to the moduli space of flat G bundles with connection on its boundary. So if we're going to do this in topology, this is the core issue we need to come to grips with. All right. Now, this is going to start involving... Now, and I also need to do this... Let's think about it. I need to do this for all surfaces and all boundaries, and it has to all fit together. It has to be good for disjoint unions, and it has to all fit together when the surface is glued together along boundary components. And so I really have to... I've got to try to find some universal place, some universal calculation to make, or some universal piece of data to specify that will give me these push forwards that's somehow independent of talking about which sigma and which boundary and which K group. I need to identify the data to define all these push forwards in a way that's independent of sigma. Okay, so that's the main thing I want to talk about, and it's out of really coming to grips with that that we'll find that we're going to learn some things about original Chern-Simons theory. Okay, so let's step back though and take and talk a little bit about and this has come up in other lectures, but what do I really need to define a push forward? So a push forward in K, well, you have a map from X to Y. Suppose X and Y are smooth manifolds. And then there's several ways of talking about this. But the main thing you need, let's suppose they're both smooth manifolds, and let's here's the usual maneuver in topology. You embed X in Y cross a big Euclidean space, And then we study the Pontryagin-Thom collapse. So that's a map from a large suspension of Y back to the Thom complex of the normal bundle of this embedding. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to take the K theory of X, go by the Thom isomorphism to the K theory of the Thom complex of the normal bundle, pull back along the Pontryagin-Thom map, and then go down by the suspension isomorphism to K of X, and this is our push-forward map. So what you really need is you need a Thom isomorphism for this bundle mu, and if I rewrite this so that all of the suspensions sort of are taken out of the picture, what I find is where nu is the relative. Let's see, it's the tangent bundle of y minus the tangent bundle of x. So it's minus the relative tangent bundle. Okay. So I want to remind you of something that came up in Charles's talk. I want to think really in topological terms about what it means to orient this. So let's suppose now, let's just think more generally. Suppose I have a vector bundle over a space X. Then to each point in S, I have a vector space. And I could associate to that vector space the one-point compactification of that vector space smashed with the K-theory spectrum. Okay, so this gives me a family of K-theory spectra parameterized by S. And if I try to stick all of those together, what I get is the Thom complex of this bundle smashed with the K-theory spectrum. And if I want to have a Thom isomorphism, I need to have this identified with S smash K theory, or I need to untwist this family of K theory spectra. So the good way to think about this for our purposes is that each of these is a module over the K theory spectrum of rank 1. It's an invertible module. And so what I get for each S is an element in the Picard group of the K theory spectrum. That's the classifying space of the category of invertible modules over K theory. And our obstruction to orienting is a map from S into Pic of K. And we have a Thom isomorphism, if and only if a Thom isomorphism corresponds to a null homotopy of this map. Okay, so that's one of the objects that we're gonna need to come to grips with. Good. What's that? That was Matt's talk. I'm sorry. Charles made a really good talk too, though, right? Okay, that was in Matthew's talk. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. That was in Matthew's talk. I'm sorry. Okay. I really liked that moment in the earlier talk, and I forgot the one just before. Oh, never mind. When the speaker thought he'd finished early, I liked that that a lot. Okay, we have a map from S into Pic K, and we want to know when is this null homotopic. So if I'm going to deal with that, I should tell you something about what Pic K is. So let's think about that for a minute. Pic K, that's the group of that's the category or the classifying space of the category of invertible K modules. So let's write down some of its homotopy groups. So the path components, that's the isomorphism classes of invertible K modules. And there's a little calculation you have to make, but when you do it, you'll find that the only ones there are the only ones you can think of. And those are K-theory and its suspension. And its double suspension, well, Bott periodicity tells me that's K-theory again. So this is just Z-mod 2. Now, let's see, the loop space, so there are, the rest of the homotopy groups are just shifted homotopy groups of the loop space. And the loop space of PIC-K is the automorphism group of any module, any invertible module, namely, for instance, the trivial module. So loops on PIC-K is the group of units in K-theory. So for the rest of the groups, we find that pi n plus 1 of PIC-K, that's the group of units in pi n of K. Or let me write it like this. It's 1 plus the reduced K theory of Sn under multiplication. That's anyway, it's homotop pointed maps from the sphere into the space of units in K theory. So that's just gonna be this group. So it'll alternate between being Z and 0. Oh, except for one instance. When n is 0, then this is the group of integers, and the units in the group of integers is Z mod 2. So pi 1 of PIC K is plus or minus 1, or also Z mod 2. And then pi 2 is 0, pi 3 is z, and then it continues 0, z, 0, z on up. I'm going to write the rest of the groups over here. So this is pi 4, pi 5, etc. Now, there's an old theorem in topology that tells you that this space, PIC K, actually splits into a product of two spaces. And the two spaces correspond to the way I've broken these homotopy groups up. So I'm going to call this is actually the only one we're going to be concerned with, and I'm going to call this PIC G of K, because I think of it as the geometric part of PIC K. And this one we won't look at, but I might as well call it PIC T of K for the purely topological part. Now, the other thing I'm going to wind up, it's much easier if I write all everything in the language of spectra. These are all infinite loop spaces, and I'm not going to distinguish in notation between this and its infinite delooping. So I'll try not to put confusing things on the board, but for us, PIC-K is an infinite loop space, and this really is going to stand for the spectrum. And this decomposition is a decomposition as a product of spectra. This PIC G of K, this, if you want, is the classifying space for graded gerbs, for Z2 graded gerbs. A space with a small number of an infinite loop space with a small number of homotopy groups corresponds to some higher Picard category, or Picard groupoid, and this is an example of one. The one that this classifies is the classifying space for graded gerbs. You'll notice that these look like the KO groups, Z2, Z2, 0, Z, and then they quit. And in fact, there is a map from loops on the classifying space for K-theory into PIC-K. If I did it in space notation, it looks like this. And this is the space of skew-adjoint real Fredholms, and this is the map that sends a skew-adjoint Fredholm to the Pfaffian gerb. So this sends a Fredholm. So this map is the Pfaffian gerb construction, if that's a more familiar point of view to you. This map is going to come up in what we're doing, but I'm going to write this map in the language of spectra. So this is the zero space of the desuspension of the K-theory spectrum, and this will map over to PIC-K. So I'm going to write this map like this, just because this notation will be more convenient. Okay, so one way or another, out of these manifolds, I got to make up something, and I got to study a map into pick K. Oh, I guess I should also have said, as long as I'm kind of ruminating on this point, I should have said the thing that sends a vector bundle V to the one-point compactification of V smash K, that gives me a map from KO to pick K. And that factors through the desuspension of KO, and this map is multiplication by eta. But I'll come back to that point a little later. Okay, all right, so what we're going to do, all right, so that's something very general about making a Thom isomorphism. Now I got to make a universal space out of these families of manifolds, and I got to make a map, use that to make a map into pick K that tells me when I can do these push-forward constructions. Okay, so let's talk about that. So I'm going to use cobordism theory, but I'm going to use a slightly funny kind that's come on the scene in the last sort of 5 or so years. But let me remind you a little bit then about cobordism. So suppose I have a space X and a vector bundle V over X. And then I'm going to right now write this, Thom X V, for the Thom complex, or the one-point compactification. Now, if I have a map from a smooth manifold S into this, so this is Pontryagin's idea that I talked about in the first lecture, that I can understand smooth maps into this Thom complex by making them transverse to the zero section and studying submanifolds of S. So a map like this corresponds to a submanifold of S, and this submanifold has codimension, the dimension of V. And let's see, this is the hitting the zero section, so this comes equipped with a map to X. Let's call this S. And the pullback of V is isomorphic to the normal bundle of M in S. Okay, so that's the usual. Then if you dress this up, you can understand the whole space of maps from here to here in terms of geometric data. If you've never heard all this, there's one thing that might be bugging you. I just said this was a space. And you might wonder what transversality means, but you can always attach to this a map to a Grassmannian classifying the bundle, and then you declare a map into the space to be transverse, a map into here to be transverse to the zero section, if and only if it is when I go over, compose with the map to the Grassmannian. And that's enough data to cut out M and do all this. Okay, so look, there's a lot of variations on this. But one of them is I don't really need there's a lot of variations. I can cross this with a big Euclidean space, and then get this sitting inside S cross a Euclidean space, and then forget about the Euclidean space, and so then I would get a then I'd find that stable maps from S into Thom of X V, but these correspond just to maps of manifolds S of relative dimension minus the dimension of V plus an isomorphism of, well, let's see, the normal bundle here is minus the relative tangent bundle, so minus the relative tangent bundle with the pullback of V. Oh, and a map from M into X, and an isomorphism of that with the pullback of V. Okay. Now, also, right, as long as I'm going to work in spectra, then I can allow V to be a virtual bundle, because if I add trivial bundles, that just suspends I could add a bundle, so I could find a bundle that when I add it to V becomes a trivial bundle and then desuspend, and there's a standard way to make all this work for virtual bundles as well. Okay, so this is sort of a quick reminder of how cobordism theory works. Let's see how that comes out in our case. Oh, good. This is right where I wanted to be. What have we got here? What do we have here? I guess it's convenient because I can just erase it while I talk about it. What we have here, I have this moduli space of flat connections on flat G connections on a Riemann surface, and then I'm also going to imagine this Riemann surface moving through a family. So we really have a space S. We have a space S. We have sitting over it some family of Riemann surfaces. And to each point, to each one of those Riemann surfaces, so if I have a point here, let's call that surface sigma little s. And to each one of these surfaces, I have a principal G bundle with a connection. All right. Now, I want to say something about the relative tangent bundle of this, of the moduli space. That we're trying to get something about. Oh, sorry, I'm not up to that yet. I'm sorry. Let's try to understand this in terms of cobordism. What kind of a cobordism object does this give me? Well, let's see. Flat connections, I can't do anything with that as a topologist. Let's just pray that what we're going to do doesn't depend on that connection. Principal bundle, that I can do. That's a map from sigma S to BG. What else? Let's see. This is actually supposed to be a bundle of surfaces, so I actually have a tangent bundle. The relative tangent bundle is really just the tangent bundle along the fibers. So I also have a map from sigma S into BSO to classifying the tangent bundle. All right, so let's put all that together. I have this big family of surfaces and a map to BO2 cross BG, BSO2, I'm sorry. And this map classifies the relative tangent bundle. So I have, let's call this F, I have a vector bundle V2 plus zero bundle over there. I have all this data, and the pullback of V2 is isomorphic to the relative tangent bundle. Well, that's almost exactly the data I talked about before to get a map into a Thom spectrum, except for a sign. I'm supposed to have an equivalence of minus the relative tangent bundle with this, or the relative normal bundle with this, and I actually have directly an isomorphism. Well, that's okay. Let's just change the sign. So that's the same as saying I have minus F star V2 with minus the relative tangent bundle. And so I find that all of that data is classified by a map from S into the Thom spectrum of BSO2 cross BG taken with respect to the virtual bundle minus the universal two-dimensional bundle over this plus zero. Now, I want to give this a name because these are pretty important Thom spectra. So let's see, let's do this a little bit more generally. I could take BSON, and I could want to consider the, so that has its universal bundle VN, and the Thom spectrum is usually called MSON. I think the M is for manifold. But we're actually going to take the Thom spectrum of minus that. And I want to name, I want to, in this story, we're going to need variations where the structure group on the Riemann surface will vary, and I'm going to need different groups here. So I want a terminology that's like this, that has the group in it, and I'm always advocating using this terminology, M-T-S-O-N, for two reasons. One is that this in this cobordism picture, this VN told us about the normal bundle. In this picture, this universal n-dimensional bundle tells me about the tangent bundle. So that's reminding me that I'm looking at the tangent bundle of the manifold. And these were also introduced by Ede Madsen and Ulrika Tillmann. And so I like this terminology because I like to get their names in it. So, okay, so that's one thing. So in that terminology, I would rewrite this. Let's see, the Thom complex of an external Whitney sum is the smash product. So this is MTSO2 smash BG with a disjoint base point in this other notation. Okay, now there's something else. There's these cofiber sequences. I can identify up to homotopy BSO n-1 with the unit sphere bundle, or the complement of the zero section, if you want, in the universal bundle over BSON. And so the mapping cone on this is the Thom space of BSON with coefficients in the, it's the Thom complex of the universal bundle. So I'm not going to write it this way, but let's think of these as Thom complexes of zero. And the way these Thom things work, if I have a cofiber sequence like this, I can add a bundle to this variable, and I'll still have a cofiber sequence. So the bundle I want to add is minus Vn. So if I do that, I'll get MTSON here. I'll get the Thom space, the Thom spectrum of BSON with coefficients in zero here, which is just the suspension spectrum of BSON. And what happens here, the restriction of the universal n-dimensional bundle becomes the universal n-1 dimensional bundle plus a trivial bundle. I'm going to take minus it, and I'll get the desuspension of MTSO n-1. So I have a fundamental cofiber sequence here. Okay, we're almost up to where I can identify this now. Now, okay, so I oversimplified one point, and that is I don't really have a family of closed Riemann surfaces. I have a family of Riemann surfaces with boundary, and that's actually what I'm looking at. So the story wasn't quite so simple. The interior of the Riemann surface had a bundle, had a two-dimensional vector bundle. On the boundary, I actually had a one-dimensional one. And if you just think through this analysis in the case of a manifold with boundary, you'll find that in the manifold with boundary case, what we really had was a map from S into the pair MTSO2 relative to the desuspension of MTSO1 smash BG. Okay, now I'm going to put a big diagram here. So if you're taking notes and you're worried about taking notes, leave a lot of room. Okay, and then up here I just identified this with BSO2. This is this thing's homotopy equivalent to BSO2 / BG. And inside, so I had a map of this parameter space here, and this map classified a bunch of data. It classified a family of Riemann surfaces and a principal G bundle over those Riemann surfaces. And what we're trying to grab is the K class of the relative tangent bundle of that thing. So there's a vector bundle. Whenever I have that data, there's a vector bundle, which is the relative tangent bundle of the moduli space of flat connections on the surface relative to the moduli space of flat connections on the boundary. And we're trying to get our hands on that vector, on that relative tangent bundle. So I don't have time in this talk to explain why, but the K-class of that vector bundle lives in the K-theory of this Thom spectrum. And what it is, so I'm gonna write it as a map. So I'm gonna take a KO class here, and the class is gonna be, so what one way of getting that is to take a representation of this group and tensor it with a representation of this group. And what I'm gonna do is take the trivial representation of this group and tensor it with the adjoint representation. So the first fact is that this K class here is giving me the relative tangent bundle of that map of moduli stack. I'm going to put a big diagram here, let me write that assertion down someplace else. What have I described? I had a map from S to some sort of moduli stack of flat G connections on surfaces with boundary. And then I had a map to MT SO2 relative to the desuspension of MTSO1 smash BG. Plus, the only reason S is in there is just to sort of try to make the technology a little lower. Then I don't have to talk, instead of talking about a stack, I'm talking about its functor of points. So I'm just saying this functorially for all this data on S, but it would amount to the same thing as if I had just talked about the stack. So over here, there's a vector bundle over here, which is the relative tangent bundle of the moduli stack of bundles over the of flat connections on each of the Riemann surfaces to flat connections on the boundary. That gives me some kind of vector bundle over this space. And I've defined a KO class here, and the claim is that this KO class is the K-theory class of this vector bundle. So this vector bundle corresponds to this map. Okay, so this is the guy. If you think through this, and I apologize, I just don't have enough time. This isn't a very difficult point, but I don't have enough time to explain it. This gives us control in topology over that very vector bundle we wanted to orient. So I had a map from that to pick K, and what I would like to know is that this map is null. And I'd like to pick a null homotopy. Well, unfortunately, that map isn't null. Most of the time, that map's not null. And you'd think that there are a lot of times, it's not null in general, and you would think that would kill the whole program. You'd think we're dead in the water, we can't make these push forwards in K-theory the way we wanted to, there's a topological obstruction to doing it. You might think that, but then you would be calling all the people that did Chern-Simons theory something you didn't want to be calling them, because they went and did it without, they didn't meet this topological obstruction, so there must be something wrong with the way we've formulated this. So again, let me try to. So let's remember, what were we doing? We had, for each individual surface, we had this moduli stack of flat G bundles with connection on the surface, and we were trying to do a push forward in K theory of a map. We were trying to do a push forward in K-theory along this map. And what we're saying, what we're observing here, is that in general, there seems to be a possible obstruction to orienting this map in K-theory. Well, that's not I don't exactly need to orient that map in K-theory to talk about a push forward. All I really need is that the orientation obstruction pull back from a class here. Because then locally, that obstruction will be zero, and I can locally form all these push forwards. And the only thing that will happen is instead of collecting together to give a K-theory class, the obstruction will appear, and I'll get a twisted K-theory class, and not actually a K-theory class. So that's the in terms of this picture, I'm not asking that this map be null. What I'm asking is that this factor through the boundary term, which is the next term in the Barrett-Pupa sequence for this pair. So that's MTSO1/BG. Okay, so the extra data we need, in order to formulate, in order to define this field theory, is a factorization in this diagram. So let me call the space of orientations that'll be the space of factorizations in that diagram. In that diagram over there. That's the space I'm interested in. And as soon as if we can find a point in that space, gives me a topological field theory with values in K modules. Okay, now, so the first thing actually to point out is that this map that associates a vector bundle to a vector bundle an element of pick K actually lands in the geometric part. So I want to just let's step back and think about what this particular piece of data is. So we got to unravel this. Let's see, what is MTSO1? SO1 is the trivial group, so BSO1 is a point. Okay, that's easy. V1 is the trivial one-dimensional vector bundle, and I'm taking the Thom complex of minus it. So MTSO1 is a really great name for the negative one sphere. So this dotted arrow, that's a map from the desuspension of BG into pick geometric K, or a map from BG into the suspension of pick geometric K. And let's just look at what the homotopy groups of this are. I've suspended it, so they're all shifted up by one. So this starts out with a Z mod 2 in 1, a Z mod 2 in 2, a 0, and a Z in 4. So this map from BG into here is built out of a 4 cocycle in BG and some extra data. So this is the old level. This is where the Chern-Simons Lagrangian enters. It's describing that map, that dotted arrow. And this is and the topology is already telling you, well, you know what? 4 cocycle in BG wasn't quite enough data. You really have to encounter a little bit more. You have to work with these two other groups. So instead of H4 of BG, we have some kind of combination of H4 with integer coefficients, H2 with Z2 coefficients, and H1 with Z2 coefficients. So this is already one thing we learn. Let's call this map tau. So the next thing I said was the thing I, so I also said that we're going to be forced into taking, the fact that the obstruction is not zero, the fact that the orientation obstruction pulls back from something over the boundary, means that when we do all these integrals locally and then put them together, we get a twisted K-theory class. And so just to check you're on the right track, I'll tell you about this is all work, by the way, with Dan Fried and Constantine Telemann. So the theorem is that of Dan Fried, myself, and Constantine Telemann, that this twisted K theory, let me write it like this, of the moduli stack of flat G bundles with connection over the circle, so the fundamental space, the fundamental boundary term, this is the Grothendieck group of positive energy representations of the loop group of G at level tau. So this is this is the right answer for Chern-Simons. All right, so that's one indication that we're on the right track. I just want to recapitulate something that all we did was try to really come to grips with the topology involved in being able to define a push forward, and that push forward gave us a topological field theory. That whole story forced us into looking at the level. It gave us a directive to consider twisted K theory, and when we do, we actually see we really get the right answer out from the point of view of Chern-Simons theory. It is the right answer, except for there's a little shift here. And I put it in the notation, and I'm going to explain it now, because that also comes out of this picture. Okay, so I want to try to wrap this up. I'm sorry, I guess I'm going to go just a couple minutes over again. There's another thing that the topology is telling us, and that is that there's a mismatch of data. See, we're really interested in factoring this. And so the set of factorizations up to homotopy is not the set of maps from here into here up to homotopy. It's the set of it's a torsor for the maps from the next term in. So two maps could be homotopic as maps, but they could fail to be homotopic as factorizations of this diagram. So I need to bring in some other terminology here. So let's call a level. Let's call the set of levels, or isomorphism classes of levels, that will be homotopy classes of maps from MTSO1 into BG. And then orientations are factorizations. So orientations, they form a torsor. That's a torsor for homotopy classes of maps from the next term into pit K. So that would be the suspension of MTSO2 / BG into pick geometric of K.
First line on board, right?
Maybe not. MTSO1 / BG into pick. So that's what the classical level is. The orientations are factorizations, and they form a torsor for this. And there's a map from orientations to levels. And when G is simple and simply connected, that map is a bijection. But for general G, that map is not a bijection. It can fail to be onto, and it can fail to be a monomorphism. I really don't want to go so much over time, and so I'm going to kind of skip one of my main points, which is that there is a canonical. This isn't just a torsor. There's a canonical. Maybe I'll just do this briefly. There's actually a canonical factorization, and it comes from the fact that on closed Riemann surfaces, the moduli space of flat G connections has a complex structure. And in this diagram, it tells me that so this is the fiber of this map. Along this is a cofiber sequence, but it's one of the Bott fibrations. And there's a factor of this diagram is factored by the symbol of the D-bar operator. Let me write it as D-bar coupled to the adjoint representation. So there's a canonical diagram here which produces a canonical factorization over here, and this is something that's much easier to see from the point of view of topology than from the point of view of index theory, but the factorization that corresponds to is the adjoint representation of G. So I'm calling this point the adjoint representation of G, followed by this inclusion to pick G of K, I'm calling H. And that's, at least pedagogically, a reason for writing it like this, because I'm in a torsor for the group of levels, and so I should really write elements as a fixed point plus something in the group. So I don't know how to make this a mathematical explanation of why this corresponds, but pedagogically, you see already a reason for writing this in this way. I'm sorry to rush. I'm just trying to. I want to make my main point, and so here's. Let me just kind of summarize. We started with Chern-Simons theory and decided to give up on a little bit of data. We decided to give up on being a three-manifold invariant, but we wanted to remember the representations of diffeomorphism groups, and we wanted to remember K-theory classes. There was one idea to try in topology, and the key thing to making all that work was to orient some spaces in a universal way. To do that, we wound up embroiled in these kind of Madsen-Tillman type of negative Tom spectra, and we found that the orientation is exactly where the level comes in. The level is the Lagrangian term. The thing that plays the role of the Lagrangian in Chern-Simons theory corresponds in this story to the data that gives you the orientation of these spaces. That's also, in retrospect, not unexpected. The Lagrangian term is what you're going to multiply by a volume form and integrate. And so it is sort of needed to do the integral. And an orientation is what you need to do an integral in a generalized cohomology theory. So that also at least fits, that coming to grips with the orientation really it really should have been where the Lagrangian came up. But topology teaches us something here. It teaches us something I don't know yet how this appears in Chern-Simons theory, but I think it must. See, orientations and levels are not the same thing. And there's situations where this map is not onto, and there's situations where it's not one-to-one. So let me just give you an example. If the group is SO3, then the set of isomorphism classes of orientations is the integers. The set of levels is the integers. But this map is multiplication by 2. So even half of the levels are difficult for trying to do Chern-Simons theory for SO3. In this case, you can remedy this by using spin Riemann surfaces. So instead of MTSO, you use MTSpin2, and then that obstruction goes away, and that's been observed. So here's another example. Let's take G to be O3. In that case, the news is worse. It's so bad I can't remember it. Hang on. Okay, this is one of these calculations that, all right. So it's the orientations is Z mod 2 plus Z mod 4 plus Z, and the levels is Z mod 2 plus Z mod 8 plus Z. And in this case, the Z2s match up, but these guys are, there's another factor of 2 here. And you can't fix this by passing to any internal structure on the Riemann surface. So there's a really different kind of problem here, and there's a topological obstruction to working at half the levels. So there's a real trouble if you're trying to do Chern-Simons theory for this kind of group. If you take the group Z mod 4, I guess I won't write this down, but both sides of this have order 16, and the map has index 2. So that means for the group Z mod 4, just for a trivial group, at level 0, there's a difference between orientations and levels. And that means that, I think what that has to mean in terms of Chern-Simons theory is that there's an anomaly in the formulation, and I haven't heard of that. That's something new that I think topology is kind of telling us about Chern-Simons theory, that when you try to do it even for finite groups and extend it to families of surfaces, there's going to be an anomaly in the formulation if you think of your level as a 4 cocycle, and you have to think of it as this much more subtle object in topology, which is a factorization in this diagram. I think I'll stop. Ezra. I think no. We've thought a little bit about orienting the Donaldson moduli spaces using these kind of techniques, and you can. It gives a minor simplification, I suppose. But there, the trouble is, and this probably works in the Donaldson-Thomason case. The Thomas case. That I was able to get the K class of this relative tangent bundle exactly because I could put local boundary conditions on the Durham D operator, and so for things like Yang-Mills and for these other things where there's no local boundary conditions, there isn't such a simple formulation in topology, and I don't know what to do there. Larry.
Yeah, so you explained to us that there was this class of H4 with values in Z, but how about the H12 is the chance of H2 and Z mod 2 and H1? Did I miss them, or are they?
No, they're in there. I just was watching the clock too carefully. So the one canonical, so those, a vector bundle over BG gives me these class, gives me an example of an element here, and the adjoint bundle we know is definitely in there. So what are those classes there, W1, W2, and P1 of the representation? So for a group whose adjoint representation isn't spin is going to hit that W2, and you won't be able to formulate the theory without doing this. So but people already knew that. They knew that you were supposed to on the moduli space of G bundles over the surface, you get this, the gerb transgresses to this line bundle, and it was known that that had to be taken to be a graded line bundle, and that's the grading. The W1 part's sort of new, and that would occur when the adjoint representation isn't orientable, like in the case of O3. So that was why I put those up. Yeah. I don't know a philosophical reason why Zmod2 graded things come up and not Z graded. But in this, you always see Z2 graded lines, Z2 graded gerbs, and there's, you could. I don't know what it is philosophically that's putting Zmod2 in there instead of some other group. But